Welcome to Chosen Voices, a podcast created by Chosen Vessels, Inc., seeking to encourage, equip, and empower leaders around the globe. I'm your host, Becca Baxter.
And I'm Autumn Bedingfield.
And this is Chosen Voices. Today on the podcast, we have Casey Bloom. Casey serves full-time in Zicheshwara, Romania, and has for the last 5 years. I'm so excited for you to hear my conversation with her. She has so much wisdom to share about her own experience serving cross-culturally in Romania. Here's my conversation with Casey Bloom. Hi, Casey. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Casey. I live in Sighișoara, Romania, and I am a long-term volunteer slash social worker.
Romania. How did you end up in Romania?
Well, I should have a better way to answer this question after all this time, but I don't. So I actually went back and read like my first blog post about coming to Romania. And the first thing I wrote, which kind of made me laugh just now, 5 years later, was I was the girl who said no to God anytime the topic of missions came up. So I grew up in a mission-minded church. I grew up in the Church of the Nazarene, which is who I'm in Romania through. And I loved attending events and listening to missionaries speak, but I never felt like, Casey, I'm calling you to that. Like, I never at all felt like I was being pulled in that direction. Now looking back, I can see that I was probably ignoring feelings and whispers. But the moral of the story is that I was just like, nope, not interested. Again, even though I wasn't like actively saying that, that's now I can see that that's what I was doing. So anyways, the way I kind of tell the story is that I did say no, and then I said maybe, and then I said yes, a small, shaky yes. But in the summer of 2013, I was a teen camp counselor. I was a school social worker for my job, so I had the summers off, and I was able to go and do teen camp counseling through my church. And I don't really even remember the sermon or what happened exactly, but I just felt kind of like a pull towards international missions. And so it was just like a very, very strong pull that I felt like I couldn't ignore, but I also like was not interested at all. And so it was in an effort to attempt to be obedient and listen, I kind of just said maybe to God to have him leave me alone, which obviously didn't work out very well, but I'm super grateful for it. But anyways, so that was summer of 2013. And then spring of 2014, I basically did nothing about that maybe until like March of 2014. And I filled out like a profile on the Nazarene Missions website and just thought, I'll just do this at least so that I can say I did something and, you know, then the doors will close. It'll be fine. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. Well, then I went back as a teen camp counselor in the summer of 2014, and every message, every song, every prayer, I was just a hot mess of tears, and my heart pounded all week long, and I just was like super, super, I don't even know what word to use. I just majorly felt like a pull and a calling to do international missions, to move to another country, to serve people and whatnot. So that's where I kind of say that I said a small, shaky yes to that, like, still small voice that, because the sermon, the pastor was talking about choosing to hear God's voice every single day. And I knew I had been choosing to ignore that, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And so, anyways, I kind of said that small, shaky yes. And then I went to visit my social work professor from college in the fall, and she talked about an opportunity for someone with their master's in social work in Romania, not knowing that I was kind of dealing with this whole path towards international missions. And so my friend Jessica was with me, and I just kind of turned and looked at her and was like, well, I guess that's it. There we go. I'm going to Romania. So that was fall 2014, I raised support, I quit my job, and March 17th, 2015, I was in Romania. And there are lots of other details and why Romania and all that stuff, but that's the moral, that's the, not the moral of the story, that's the somewhat not abbreviated version.
So in that season between camp in 2014, or no, in 2013, and then the next year in 2014, you said that you knew you'd been choosing to ignore the call, that God had kind of started that stirring in 2013. What was that year like with the Lord?
So I'm an Enneagram 9. Just get that out of the way right now. And so I can avoid things really well. Well, I think I can, and then I can't. But I think I just avoided any, like, after that point, any, like, missionaries that came to speak at our church or whatever. I don't, like, super remember. Yeah, if that makes sense. But, like, I just know that I was avoiding and ignoring and not listening. But I also, because I'm like firstborn rule follower, I was like, Casey, you said maybe you have to do something, which is why I then, you know, filled out that profile. But it was an out, not like an active step forward. I mean, it was and it wasn't. I can say that, you know, hindsight, but yeah.
So when you said yes, your small shaky yes in 2014, did you feel relief and peace, or did the reality set in? What was that like? What were the emotions behind saying yes to being obedient to go?
I was terrified. It's like even now when I tell that story, I feel like I can feel what I felt then, which was just like my heart was pounding and I thought, what on earth have I just done? And like, how will this happen? I mean, a huge part of kind of ignoring feelings and whatnot was also just related to finances. I just thought, there's no way I can raise support and go live anywhere for an extended period of time. You know, I had been a social worker. I did have a decently paid job, but like, I was a social worker. So, and I obviously had student loans, and I just thought, this is never going to work. But, yeah, I just had a lot of fear, but I also, yeah, it was almost like, I don't know if this is a good example, but like Jesus calming the storm, like the storm was present, but there was this peace that I knew this was like exactly what I was supposed to do, even though at that point I had no idea of Romania. I mean, I obviously knew about Romania, but like I had no leads, but I still knew. Yeah, that's what I was supposed to pursue.
So when you said yes to serving cross-culturally, you had no idea where you would end up, how the Lord would weave that story in the next coming months and years, but you said yes to him anyways. Correct. And I love that part of your story, that you did not know what was coming, but you were willing to be obedient without knowing what was going to come. So
yeah. And I mean, honestly, it's one of those things where it's like, if I had known, I think I still would have said no, or no, period. I think I would have said no, just because, oh, yeah.
So fast forward, you're now in Romania, and you have been for 5 years. What does your normal day in ministry look like in Romania?
Well, I would say there's no normal day. Kind of from the start, I figured that out, that there's no normal day, there's no normal week. But what's usually on my calendar, what I write in my planner, is, so I mentioned earlier that I'm here through the Church of the Nazarene, and I also work with a local NGO called Veritas. When I first came, I had mentioned that there was an opportunity for someone with their master's in social work in Romania. Sorry, I'll get to the answer of the question in a second. But so I initially came to work with American University students who would come to do their social work practicum through a program called the Romanian Studies Program. And so those students did their practicum through Veritas and sometimes through the church's like programs and ministries as well. So I, at the beginning, kind of was involved in a lot of different Veritas programs. They have things for kids, adults, teens, adults with disabilities, elderly, survivors of domestic violence, all different kinds of things. So I kind of was in a little bit of everything at the beginning just to get my feet wet. But a lot of things have changed over the years. And so my main day-to-day ministry looks like I 2 days a week, I have a program called It Takes Courage that I co-lead with my coworker and one of my best friends, Adela, who is now on maternity leave. So I am now leading those programs. But this is a character development program for teenagers that we do everything in English. It's somewhat similar to like American style youth group in the idea that we have games. There's a lot of interaction, a lot of, just interactive dynamic lessons, trying to just help them become better humans in their homes, in their schools, in their community. And so we talk about different character traits. We do lessons on creating a vision for your life, making wise decisions, healthy communication, healthy relationships, all that kind of stuff. So 2 days a week, I focus my time there. And then 2 afternoons a week, I go out to a nearby village where the Church of the Nazarene has a church/community center. And so I work with a child development center or a child development program there. And the kids in that program primarily come from marginalized Roma or Gypsy families. And so we are trying to provide holistic development. We're trying to provide meals and homework help and games and socialization and spiritual development and, all of those things. So I work with a young woman named Roxana who runs the program, and I just love being out there with them. And then this is a very long answer, but I am not as involved with the students that come anymore. So that was a huge part of my day-to-day ministry, but now not so much. And then I also just work with Veritas, helping with the newsletter, proofreading, doing marketing and posters. And I've done a training a time or two, or led devotions, or just kind of whatever. So the moral of the story here is 2 days a week with It Takes Courage, 2 days, 2 afternoons a week out in the village with the kiddos, and then a lot of other stuff like relational ministry and these days, of course, Zoom, house party, texting, social media, FaceTime, all of that. But
how has, in this, you brought up these days, so there's been kind of a shift in ministry around the world. And so what has that transition looked like for you going from a really full weekly schedule of serving lots of different communities and groups within your community in your town? How has that shifted in the past couple of weeks in this crazy quarantine pandemic season of life that we are in?
I have tried to stay connected with the It Takes Courage teens. It's much easier to stay connected with them as they have these, they have phones and just technology and internet. So we've had kind of an ongoing Zoom meeting room set up, or we're on house party. So the same days that we would have had the program, that's when, Wednesdays at 3, we've done It Takes Courage, and Thursdays at 3, we've done the It Takes Courage 2.0 group. And so really just trying to give them an opportunity to stay connected. But there's just been a lot of texting and social media interaction. I've also been able to start a Bible study, more or less, with 2 girls who graduated from the It Takes Courage program. We've just talked about one day starting a Bible reading plan just on the Bible YouVersion app. And so we decided to connect every few days on video, which that has been an unexpected blessing. And also, I think, like an unexpected encouragement and newly found passion, I guess. But yeah, other than that, it's a lot of reading and trying to grow and develop myself, but also just some different areas or reading about different topics that will help me in ministry in the future. A lot of podcasts, a lot of coffee, a lot of worship music. Really trying to use this time wisely, even if I'm not being productive by society's standards. I feel like I've been productive in slowing down, I guess, and spending time with God and learning about myself and others and whatnot.
I think that's really awesome, and that you've utilized this season really well and how to stay connected to your people and also spend time with the Lord. So you mentioned it takes courage. You have girls that you're doing Bible study with that have graduated from the program. So could you talk about this different levels of It Takes Courage and kind of the process that a student might go through going through the It Takes Courage program?
Yes. So when I first came into the It Takes Courage program with Adela, there was one group of teens. And so it would just be one group for one school year. They would, you know, from September to May, they would come each week and do the program. It started out as an open group, and then we would close it just so there could be more like intimacy and we could build upon things and whatnot. But after a year or two, I think, we kind of realized that they wanted more and we wanted more of them too. We wanted to give them more and they wanted to receive more. And so we decided to start a 2.0 group. So kind of, we'd say like an upgraded version, the next level. And so we've been doing that for 3 years now, I think. And so again, it's the same idea that we meet every week, but now they've got a year's worth of foundational like character development, and then we move on and kind of take everything just to the next level and are putting into practice a lot more. I mean, we try to put everything into practice in the first year, but then in the next year, even more so. So we've done different projects like service community project types of things. And, but then we also kind of decided to take it another step further and have a 3.0 group. And so that often tends to be a much smaller group, which is not a bad thing because obviously we can get to know them even more and spend more like quality time with them. And so that's tended to be anywhere from like 3 to 6. But again, at that point, they're 3 years in. We know them really well. We can talk about all kinds of things. I mean, I remember one time we were all at my house and talking about just things that teenagers don't always open up about. And it was just such a privilege sitting there with Adela, knowing that these kids, I call them kids, they're teenagers, that they trust us and that we've built a relationship that has brought us to the point of being able to talk about really hard things. And so if I keep talking, I will cry. But then the 3.0 group, if they had started It Takes Courage in ninth grade, they could potentially do ninth grade of It Takes Courage, 10th grade with 2.0, 11th grade and 12th grade with 3.0. We kind of stopped at 3.0, and then basically they can stay in for 2 years of that. And obviously then most of them tend to go off to school or are working, and so they can still be involved. But
What type of development do you see when you have a student that comes the first week of It Takes Courage? And then you have the last week of 3.0, they're about to graduate. What do you see in students most frequently, that development that comes out of the It Takes Courage program?
I mean, there's just major growth. I'm thinking of one girl specifically, well, actually a couple. And a boy too. Anyways, a few of them. First of all, you know, they always start a little nervously in the first few weeks of It Takes Courage, especially if they come in not really knowing like me or Adela. And they've come, you know, because a friend told them about it or their teacher talked about it at school or whatever the case may be. But it's usually, you know, they're a little shy and I wanted to say obedient, but it's not like they're disobedient at the end. It's just, they're kind of like, cuminte, we would say in Romanian. I don't know how to explain it, But just like doing what's expected, answering a question here or there. But by the end, it's like they learn how to express themselves. And this is one thing that a girl specifically said one time, is that she learned how to express herself, how to express her opinion, how to like argue respectfully, how to disagree with people and still maintain her own values and opinions and beliefs, especially when they're different than other people's. And the ability to ask questions of others and to themselves. I think that's one thing that I see a lot, is that they're more willing to like understand themselves, which then helps them understand others. But also just seeing them take opportunities like volunteering at a camp that they would probably not have done before, or, you know, volunteering to speak. You know, we have like English camp each summer and we talk about It Takes Courage. And so we ask past It Takes Courage kids to come kind of advertise. And so they're willing to come and talk about it in front of their peers and also other kids they don't know. And to me, that's just huge. Like to be able to, I don't know. I think part of it too is related to just Romanian culture and the history of communism, and where you didn't ask questions. You just go with the flow. You do what you're told. You don't ask questions. You don't really express yourself. I would also just say like self-confidence, which I think is, totally related to expressing yourself. When you feel confident in yourself and in your beliefs, but like you can feel confident in that and not feel confident to express that. So I think it's both of those things. Like there's a young man who just, has come miles and miles. He used to just not really engage, and you know, now is like just way more confident in who he is. And of course there's still, like, even now with me, you know, I still struggle with things like that. So it's not like you reach a point and you're like the fully confident human being, but just coming a long way in confidence and self-expression, I think, are probably the two big ones.
And I think to come to that point of being confident in yourself and also confident to express your thoughts, there has to be a safe environment to do that in. So how do you create a safe space for these students to come and grow together, but also individually? What are some of the things that you've implemented with that, or how have you created that space for them to come and grow?
Well, I think having it be a closed group is one piece of it. And so, like I said before, the first few months, it's an open group, anybody can come. But then after that, it's a closed group. And then, of course, if they continue on to 2.0, it's their same closed group. We don't reopen it. And so I think that is a huge piece of it, of just having, you know, potentially 3 to 4 years of safety in a group of people. We talk a lot about respect, and not in the idea of like what happens at It Takes Courage stays at It Takes Courage, but like there is a confidentiality, I feel like, of like if I say in this group that I'm struggling with something, we're not going and airing out people's dirty laundry on social media. Or there just seems to be this real understanding of respect and intimacy. And we always talk about each group kind of forms their own family. And I think that's related to the things I've already mentioned. But then also, we, Adela and I, really in the last few years have worked hard to get to know them outside of the room, outside of the program, outside of the building. And so, you know, they've come over to my house for tacos, or we've gone out for coffee, or, you know, hiked up a hill nearby and just played games. And I think it's teenagers want to be seen and heard. And I think we really try hard to, we really try hard to see and hear them. And I think they pick up on that. And I hope and pray that they know how much we love them. And you're going to have to keep going, because otherwise I'm going to cry. Here we go. But yeah, so, I mean, I'll continue. Fine. I think it is. It's just that, like, we really care about them. And I think when you know that somebody cares about you and takes time to hear you and see you and love you, like, I just, usually that breaks down most of the barriers, and they're lovely human beings. So it's also easy to do those things.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm going to make you feel really uncomfortable for a second, because I'm going to tell you that I have had the privilege of getting a brief snapshot look into It Takes Courage groups, and really primarily because of time in the summer with English camp, and then seeing who sticks around through their program and really catching up with them every summer. And I just want to say that there is clear emotional and spiritual mental development that happens to the It Takes Courage program. The interrelational growth is unbelievable. And the way that you and Adela take time to really see your students and to love them well in all seasons of life throughout their high school experience is incredible. And so I love the It Takes Courage program. I love that you love the It Takes Courage program. And I know that your teens love you too. So it is one of my absolute favorite things that you do. But so it's awesome.
Thanks.
So as you are serving in multiple different capacities throughout the week and throughout the year, what are some of the challenges that you have seen emerge in your ministry context?
Well, language is always a challenge. I didn't speak Romanian when I first came to Romania. And so I'd actually gotten some CDs from the library that I would listen to when I was driving to and from work, like the month before I quit and came to Romania. But oh golly, there's only so much you can learn like that. So language is a huge piece. I mean, I am definitely able to communicate. There's so much learning to be done as far as language. And then even related to that would be culture too. It's, you know, the longer I'm here, the more I don't understand. Even though you'd think it would be the opposite, it's not. Just as you get deeper into different things, organizations, people groups, issues, you just learn more, and then it's like more questions and more answers to find. And so, I mean, language and culture is huge, but it's also like an amazing challenge. I guess I would say I love it, but that sounds weird to say. I think the other challenge that I face is just my own fears of not being enough, not being fill in the blank enough. That was another huge piece of not wanting to pursue international missions, because I just thought, I can't do that. I'm not Christian enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not cultured enough. I'm not enough. And so while I've definitely learned that I can do hard things and I can learn, there are times when it's still hard to move forward and get over those fears, or not really even get over them, but to work through them and to realize that I can either let the fear win and not XYZ, whatever, not continue to try to build this relationship that's really hard, or I can push through and try to keep building this relationship, whatever it might be. This is just an example. Then there could be tremendous growth for both myself and the other person or program or, you know, whatever it is. So that's another big one. But I think also something that's constantly challenging me is just boundaries and knowing when to say no. Again, when I first came, or when I first was thinking about coming to Romania, I thought, what the heck am I going to do over there? Like, what do I possibly have to offer people? Sure, I have a degree, but like, what can I really do? And so it was kind of God's funny joke to me, because I had the ability and skills and experience in education to do a lot of things in a lot of programs. I mean, I was involved with the kids and with teens and with adults with disabilities, you know, as I had been a social worker and I'd worked in special education and I had worked at a home for adults with disabilities. And I mean, it was just like amazing that I could do all these different, and that sounds, I don't want that to sound prideful, but I think it was a shock to me. But also then the challenge was that because I could do all these things, I did all these things. I said yes to all these things. And then I burnt out. And so I realized that. And so then it is an everyday challenge of like, am I going to say yes? Am I going to say no? You know, and just learning about that whole thing of boundaries and yeah, just saying yes to this is saying, or no, I guess it's the opposite. Saying no to this means I can say yes to, you know, this other thing. And yeah, just kind of navigating that and figuring that out has been, I would really say, an almost daily challenge.
So when you first got to Romania and you were saying yes to a lot of different things because you had the skill to do a lot of different things, how quickly did you see burnout coming? And when did you notice? What were some of the signs that either your body was telling you or that you were recognizing to say, hey, we're burned out?
Well, initially, everything was new and exciting and it was fine. You know, it was like, oh, I can do this. I can do this too. Oh, what about this? This is fun. But it definitely, it's hard to say exactly, I think, because so I came in 2015 in March, was here for the summer, went home, came back in the fall. But then in the spring of 2016, I was able to go to Serbia, Croatia, and Greece in like March and May on just different trips to do some refugee response work with the church. And so after that, I came home again. Sorry, this is a little timeline. But, and then when I came back after that, don't ask me years and times and whatever, but it was almost like a fresh start because I came back in the fall. But it also felt really daunting. And I think that was like my clue. That was one of the clues. I mean, I was just exhausted. I was trying to do all of the things and I don't want this to sound like overly negative, but like I wasn't doing any of them well because I was trying to do too much. And so then I was like frustrated with myself and my patience ran out and, you know, more quickly than it had before. But I was tired. I couldn't get out of bed in the morning. I think it was 2018, I chose the word light for my like word of the year because 2017 had been a very dark year. And I think that was all related to being burnt out. Yeah, just feeling exhausted mentally, emotionally. I would often come home and just sit on the couch and I was just like numbing out. Like I just couldn't do anything. And, you know, I'm a social worker. We learn about burnout in school. I was teaching about burnout to these American students who were coming. And every semester when I would teach that PowerPoint, show that PowerPoint, I just thought, what am I doing? Like, you know, it was burnout. It was compassion fatigue. It was, what's the other one? Secondary trauma, all these things that like, I was resonating with most of the checklist. And I just thought, Casey, what are you doing? You know? And so it's been a journey. It was not like, I realized it, I fixed it, and I'm done. No, it is still something that is really hard. And I still am trying to figure out how to do it now.
So what did that initial recovery time look like when you, because you mentioned 2017 being kind of a dark year, 2018, you picked the word light. So what did recovery from burnout while you were still on the field, because you did not come home for a long span of time to recover from burnout. You stayed on mission in Romania. And so what did recovery from burnout look like for you personally?
In choosing the word light, which was really the first year I'd actively chosen a word of the year. And I really think that God gave me that word. Kind of that process of choosing that word really helped me because I broke it down into four sections, I guess, of seeking light. That was the first one, which was I knew that I was not connected to the ultimate power source. And so I needed to spend time with God. And so seeking that light, trying to continue to be a light and share the light that I knew that I still, you know, had, and I still had access to. And by seeking light, I would then, you know, be able to be one. Lightening the load was another one. And that is where I really just tried to start saying no more often. But it probably took a good while. I'm so terrible with time, which I think, again, is another piece of burnout, is that like all the time just blurs together. And so it was probably half a year, if not a whole year, of just kind of trying to reevaluate everything that I was doing.
So you talked about lightening the load. How do you personally know what you're going to say no to and what you're going to say yes to? What are some things that you measure that up against before you commit to something or before you take something off your list?
With like podcasts and books and different things, I have tried to, and encouragement from friends like Becca, of, you know, what is life-giving? What do I love to do? What am I passionate about? What do I have the skills to do? Who does my heart break for? Who do I just love to be with and spend time with? And, you know, it's those, it all sounds very like frilly and like, ooh, I don't know what word, but, and really paying attention to like, what do I dread? What am I always like, oh great, I got to go to this again, you know? And yeah, I think it really is. How do you feel about fill in the blank activity, Casey? You know, do you love it? Do you not love it? Why do you love it? Why do you not love it? And it's just like a lot of questions I've started to ask myself. And thankfully, again, having friends who can ask me these questions as I talk to them about this stuff too. Yeah, just being, I mean, I'm already pretty introspective, but being even more introspective and just asking the hard questions.
So as you have explored that, what have you found that you love the most about serving in Romania?
Well, I mean, 1,000%. I just love the work that I get to do with It Takes Courage. And I mean, really, I would say, while I do love that program, it is teenagers in general that I love. This last time I went home and spoke in churches and different groups and things, I kind of, in developing that talk, realized that my kind of mission, slogan, whatever you want to call it, you know, is sharing God's big love in small everyday moments. And I think that's what it is. It's the program with the teenagers and being able to see them every week, but it's, you know, 3 hours on FaceTime, just talking about life, whether it's a specific issue that a, you know, teen or young adult is facing, or just like chatting. It's having a couple of them over for tacos. It's that relational piece. And I think, I don't want to go too much into this, but I think it's, when I was a teenager, I didn't always feel seen and heard and loved. And so I don't want any other teenager to have to experience that, or child for that matter, which is where the next piece of like the small everyday moments out in the village with the kiddos is just like remembering their names. I mean, sometimes there have been like 50 to 80 of them. And so it's not always easy, but really working to remember names and complimenting them. I mean, these kids don't hear positive feedback very often, positive encouragement. And so just noticing little things is kind of my favorite thing, of just like saying, I see you. Oh dear, here we go. Yeah, that. Yeah, I want them to know that not only that I see them, but hopefully through those interactions, they ultimately understand that God sees them and hears them and loves them.
That's awesome. I love your slogan of, because I think what it does is it creates a rhythm of a missional life that you're not looking for the next great grand project to engage in. You're looking to put down roots and to engage on a day-to-day level, seeing someone face-to-face and eye-to-eye. And I think that is the way that God deals with us. And so to be able to then go and turn that around to show the world the way that God is willing to deal with us face-to-face and eye-to-eye in the small moments of the day-to-day, I think that is really beautiful.
Yeah, and that's even what was another like scary thing to me when I thought about, you know, being a missionary, which you know how I feel about that word. but it's, I just always thought, well, I can't go preach sermons. I'm not a, you know, preacher. I can't go, you know, I can't, again, it's that I'm not whatever enough, but I can't do this. I can't do that. But I think that is what I've learned is that like, that's, that all of that is excellent and needed. And, you know, I'm not knocking any of that, but God knows who I am and I love the little things in life. And then, you know, he has just given me, not like given me the gift, but like it has been a gift to me to be able to do that basically as my ministry. Like, I don't know, I'm actually kind of processing this right now as for the first time, but just, yeah, I just think those things are so important. And I think, gosh, there's story after story of Jesus just like seeing people and hearing people and feeling the touch of, you know, his garment. And yeah, those people's lives were changed because he saw them. He paused, he stopped, he turned around and he saw them. And so good.
And that's a thing that people can do wherever their context of life is. And so you don't have to be in a different culture. You don't have to be in a different physical location. That is something that we can all do exactly where we are to seek to see people around us. And so I know that's something that you talk about often too, is that you are living a very similar, in theory, a similar life than as you would live in the States, but you're living it in Romania. I mean, that day-to-day life of on mission, people can do that anywhere.
And that's, there was, I don't, it was some message of some workshop conference that I went to, but the idea was just walk across the room. That was kind of like the tagline, the main point, because whatever room that is, if that's your cubicle, if that's your neighbor, if that's your, you know, your city, maybe it is, you go to the other side of the city, you go to the other side of the street, whatever it is, just like walk across the room. It doesn't have to be as scary and crazy as flying thousands of miles, but yeah, it's an opportunity that we absolutely all have right in front of us. And that's what we're really supposed to do.
I love that. Say there is a young person listening though today and has started to feel that emotional nudging of the Lord to go. That process that started for you in 2013 is starting for them in this season. And they are feeling the urging of the Spirit. What would you say to them as things to pray into, things to be aware of as they are seeking to be obedient, but also working through maybe some of the same fears that you were dealing with through this whole process?
There's so many tools out there right now of just like getting to know yourself and your skills and your abilities. And so I think there's value in that, but I think also as like talking to people who are doing it, whatever it is, cross-cultural service, for example, or, you know, someone who has done it, or yeah, just having conversations. I think that was a huge piece, you know, at both of those summer camps. I didn't say this earlier, but at both of those summer camps, there was, there were missionaries there, as kind of just an extra thing of exposure of, interests, they had special activities and whatnot. And I, as a counselor, ended up talking, I think it was the second year when I was really feeling it, ended up talking to the wife of the couple. And I think it was conversations like that and hearing other people say that, like, it's possible, even with whatever fill in the blank barrier you feel is too big to make it happen. But I do obviously think, like, praying and asking God, like, okay, I think I hear you saying this. And so, you know, can you give me clarity? And when I think specifically about maybe college age young people, or just any adult, I suppose, is developing a skill. I think there's such value in going into another culture with a skill, a useful skill. And so, you know, for me, that was social work, even though, again, that was not part of the plan. I had already chosen social work as my major, graduated, was in the field, you know, so on and so forth. But I think even if it's a hobby, even if it's photography or videography that you can then go and work with this NGO or this church and have a skill, something that you can bring to the table, obviously who you are, let me just say, who you are is enough. And the way that God made you and the skills and experiences and education or whatever life has brought you, that is for sure enough. But if we're really talking of, like, logistically speaking, you need to have a skill to bring to the table and something to offer, you know, church, organization, community, whatever it is that you're seeking, or not seeking, whatever it is that you're looking for going to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. That's really good. What has God taught you in the past year with your cross-cultural ministry experience?
Related to a lot of what I've already talked about with, like, burnout and, you know, doing all of the things, is just, not just, but this idea of being with God over doing things for Him. I felt that before coronavirus, but I then think with coronavirus, it was like, aha, okay, this is very important. And, you know, like, not that, like, I have no choice now, because I still could have chosen not to do that. But I think there's just so much that society pushes productivity and be efficient and let's do all these things. And then especially in kind of that cross-cultural servanthood of, you know, you're a volunteer, you came here to serve and to help. Which is true, I did. But I also know that God wants me before He wants what I can do for Him. And so I wish I had learned that sooner, and I will probably forever be learning it and figuring out how to best do that. But I think, and of course, like, He still wants us then to do things for Him, but I just think kind of the priority of, like, being with Him. He wants you before He wants what you can do. And that is something that I've just been learning. And I'm also thinking a lot about now going forward, of not wanting to, like, go back to the crazy, rushed, chaotic pace of life, of, like, I still want to prioritize being with Him and then doing things for Him, because I will then be able to do those things so much better anyway. And So I think that's a huge thing, that after being burnt out and connecting back to the light and growing, which was my next word for the year, and now it's create, you know, it's, as I look back, I kind of can see this, like, journey that I've been on all kind of, yeah, going this direction, I guess.
That's awesome. Him just pulling you, not just, but Him pulling you in to sit with Him and allow Him to fuel your day to day. And that is beautiful. And I hope and pray that those rhythms that you've been able to establish in the last couple weeks of sitting and being with Him, that as you transition, as others transition too, that we will be able to take things that we've learned in this season, the past couple weeks, about being instead of doing and producing, being the primary goal, but being with God and displaying his goodness. So that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it. So there's one more question that I wanted to ask you before we kind of close out. And this is kind of speaking, as you know, Chosen Vessels serves people serving cross-culturally, but also people that are serving within their own cultures in their own context that they grew up in. And so as we kind of talk about different needs to be meeting in different ways that CV can engage with them, also on a face-to-face, eye-to-eye level, what are some of the needs that you see specifically with cross-cultural servants around the globe that may not be the first thing that people think about being immediate needs for people serving within a new cultural ministry context?
One of the things that comes to mind is the need for everyone to understand that these people, these cross-cultural servants, as we're going to call them, are not perfect Christians. And so with that, like, they need your accountability. They need encouragement to Sabbath and people asking them about burnout, and they need obviously prayer, but like, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's still a need for discipleship and relationship for those that are serving cross-culturally.
I think we just, and this is what I had in my mind, and this is no one's fault. I just had in my mind that, you know, missionaries are these like incredible, I mean, they are these things too, but like they're these incredible human beings that are just so like God has given them this special gift, which again is true. I'm not trying to sound like it's not, but it's like they're on this elevated pedestal that they're perfect and they don't need much.
Mm.
And again, that was a misunderstanding that I had, but I have encountered that a lot since being one of those people, which I am not a perfect, all those things that I just said, not me. And so I think, yeah, that even though, like, and I'll speak for myself, even though I might come across as a fiercely independent single young woman who moved across the globe and is like doing her thing. Yes. And I need help. I need accountability. I need people like Becca who text me and just say like, how are you? And of course, like I have friends and you know, I do get that, but I think like intentional discipleship would probably be a big one. And just people asking like, what do you really need? Which I don't always have an answer, or I don't usually have an answer for that. Because I think again, Enneagram 9, I just like kind of ignore my own thoughts and needs and, but kind of people who will continue to push that. And, but again, reminders about Sabbath and encouragement and just engagement, I guess.
So if someone has a close family member or friend that is serving cross-culturally, what is something they can do right now today to reach out? That would be an encouragement to that person.
I mean, as far as right now today, write them mm-hmm. a text or a message or something that just literally says like, I see you, I love you. I mean, just like really whatever your form of like encouragement is, whether that's a picture or like, hey, I thought of you today, because I think it's the small everyday moments. It might be like, hey, can we write down in pen on the calendar this week, a coffee date via FaceTime mm-hmm. and just reaching out, because I think, yeah, it's those small everyday moments that make such a huge difference.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. That is great. I would also encourage anyone listening to do that, to find someone today. I'm sure there is someone that is, what do they say, how many degrees away from you, whatever it is.
7 degrees of separation.
Yep. Find someone in your circle or your circle that is serving cross-culturally and figure out a way to safely, I'll add that in too, to safely mm-hmm. communicate with them, to just give some type of encouragement, because a little goes such a long way. For Casey's case, she moved alone by herself to a new city across the globe and planted herself. And you've created an incredible community around you in Romania, but there is still something to that connection of saying, hey, I see you, I miss you, I've been thinking about you, let's connect. Well, Casey, I think we could talk probably forever and ever about so many different topics serving cross-culturally, so you'll have to come back at some point and talk more about all kinds of things. But I just want to thank you for giving your time today and your wisdom and your expertise, and also just sharing your story so vulnerably with everyone. And we are so grateful and we are better for it. So thank you.
Well, thanks for asking me to do this, even though I was terrified, but...
Well, you made it. You made it to the end. So,
I did.
Oh, dear. Is there anything else that you want to add before we finish wrap up?
I would just add that whether it's, you know, a 20-something who's looking and figuring out if cross-cultural service is for them, or if it's someone who is trying to figure out what their, you know, just walk across the room interaction looks like, I think the reminder that, like, you are enough and what you have and who you are is powerful. And, like, that God can literally use anyone. If I am here 5 years later, still doing this, it's anybody can do it. And even in your brokenness, I think because of your brokenness and messiness of just being a human, like, I think there's such goodness that can come. And I don't want to over spiritualize it all, because I think just whoever you are, whatever your next thing is, like, you have what it takes, and there are people around you that love you and support you and care about you. And you might just have to, like, open your eyes and turn your head to see them, but, like, they're there. And so I think God can use anybody. Ask for help. You are enough. There you go.
That's awesome. I love that. If we could all live by those three things all the time, that would be awesome.
Well, and let me just say, I tell those three things to myself every day. So I'm not trying to, like, say that, like, I know it and I have it figured out, because I do not, but I have learned that I need to remind myself of those three things all the time. And that's just been super helpful for me. And I think it can just apply to anybody as they're trying to impact other people in their small everyday moments.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you so much, Casey. I appreciate you giving your time and your expertise and your wisdom and encouragement to those listening, and also telling your story. And we'll have to have you back soon to continue this conversation, because there's so much left that we could talk about for hours and hours and hours. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Man, I just love Casey Bloom.
Yeah, she sounds so awesome. I've never met her, and I'm really sad because I was supposed to meet her this summer, I think. We had talked about meeting up in Atlanta for something. But Casey's not from Atlanta, right?
No, she is from Freeport, Illinois, right outside of Chicago. And I don't think we mentioned that in her actual interview. But yeah, so she moved from Freeport to Romania.
Right. And so did y'all meet in Illinois? Or did you meet... Where did y'all meet?
We met in Romania. So when I was there for the summer staying in Schwaard, we were working in the kindergarten. And her and her coworker Adela came... to help do some hard labor on the kindergarten. And so we connected there. And that's how I kind of got involved with English camp too. She mentions English camp really briefly in her story for the local teens that get to come to go to English camp for a week. So that is how we connected, was in Romania.
Yeah, that's really cool. I always thought y'all had met stateside and then reconnected when you got there. But no, you guys just met and connected when you were over there. And so you know her personally. Y'all are good friends. You've mm-hmm. stayed with her a couple times. Mm-hmm. Visit basically every time you see her in Romania mm-hmm. when you travel over there. What are some things about Casey that you see that she didn't share about herself? Mm.
She is one of the most empathetic people I have ever met. The way that she sees situations and all the different perspectives is such a gift to people. She talks about wanting to be the person that sees the unseen, and she truly lives that out. She looks for the person that might have been overlooked and seeks them out to love them well. And I've learned so much from her about Romania, about cross-cultural service, about teen ministry, so much. She is truly gifted in walking in the Spirit. So,
and I just think that whether you're cross-cultural serving or you're in your hometown, that's something that you can take in. It really emulates Jesus's model of looking for the person that no one else is cheering on. Mm-hmm. It's just really cool what she's doing through the lives of the teenagers. And it's also just, like she said, moral of the story is that you can serve people wherever you're at. She took the skills that she had mm-hmm. in Chicago and the job that she was doing in Chicago, mm-hmm. and she just translated it to cross-cultural ministry. And she didn't skip a beat or have to relearn a whole career path or a whole new way. And she kind of, mm-hmm. in the podcast, she said she kind of does what she would have been doing in Chicago or in the States mm-hmm. in Romania. It's just a different culture and a different language, and she's having to relearn some things, but she's just taking what she knows and mm-hmm. going somewhere that needs those skills. And I think that's something that's really cool. And I think sometimes when you talk about cross-cultural ministry, people think they have to, and you've probably seen it, people think they have to rethink their whole way of living. Mm-hmm. And I think her story is cool because it shows you can do what God designed you for and what you know, and you can do it in a different place. And mm-hmm. a lot goes into that. And she's obviously helping young kids find their voice, mm-hmm. Which is something that every kid needs to learn, but it's really cool. So
yeah, I agree. I think there's something really special about taking skills that God's given you that you've invested time and money and education into, and then taking that somewhere else that needs it and seeing how that works together, like you're saying. It's really cool.
Yeah, and she also talked about the roots of like why kids might not have confidence sharing their thoughts and like the mm-hmm. cultural roots of that. It's just cool to see how God weaves that together, is mm-hmm. that her strong suit was helping kids find themselves, and he put her just kind of, she didn't go out seeking for it, but mm-hmm. someone said, hey, check out Romania, and her exact skill set was what those kids really needed in mm-hmm. their cultural roots and the history of the country and all. So she's doing big things over there.
She is. Yep. She's awesome.
Yeah, and she also, I don't know if she meant to do this, but she foreshadowed a whole ton in her episode of what we're seeking to share with our listeners over in the next few weeks. And so she mentioned about every topic that we have planned out for our next few episodes. So shout out to Casey for kind of setting us up like that. So coming forward, mm-hmm. or looking forward, what topics stuck out that we're going to be mentioning?
We're going to talk about Sabbath. We're talking about burnout. She talked about burnout recovery. Discipleship, she talked a lot about like the need for discipleship for cross-cultural servants. What are some other ones that you noticed?
She mentioned processing trauma on the mission field. Mm-hmm. We're also going to talk some about linguistics coming up, mm-hmm. and she talked about speaking the language. A lot of different things and dynamics she brought up in her conversations.
We hope you loved Casey's story. We love hearing Casey's story. And we hope that it was an encouragement to you. And if you have questions or you want to reach out, feel free to email us at chosen.vessels.inc@gmail.com or find us at chosenvesselsonline.org. And don't forget to rate and review the show. It helps us a lot when we show up on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So.